This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run. Now, as I think COVID continues to dominate headlines, the question about children, are we protecting them? What needs to be done from them has arisen because we're seeing more and more children getting infected and hospitalized for COVID-19.
I mean, for example, in Sarawak, around 29% of the reported cases in the first 12 days of August were from people below 18 years of age. Now, last week it was announced that vaccination for all children between the ages of 12 to 17 will begin from 15 September, with priorities given to those with underlying medical conditions, then followed by healthy adolescents from older to younger.
But will vaccine hesitancy among adolescents and their parents be a concern? And with schools due to reopen in October and relaxations in movement controls, how can we protect the young? So for some insights into this, we have consultant pediatrician Dato' Dr. Musa Muhammad Nordin on the line with us. Good morning, Doctor. Now, what are some of the considerations and concerns here on vaccinating the 12 to 17-year-olds?
Hi, guys, and selamat pagi to all BFM listeners. It was the Israeli health officials who first flagged the issue of inflammation of the heart, or myocarditis, in April this year. They reported about 60 cases, mostly in young men, who had received their second dose of the Pfizer vaccine a few days earlier. But most of the cases were mild and resolved spontaneously with bed rest or ibuprofen, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, NSAID. Now, the highest at risk were the 12 to 17-year-old boys at 67 per million. Girls, less frequent, at 9 per million. But to balance the risk of myocarditis, the benefits accrued from the vaccination, as reported by the CDC, were the COVID vaccines prevented 5,700 cases of COVID. 215 hospitalizations can be avoided. 71 ICU admissions were prevented. 2 deaths were prevented. And the vaccine prevented multi-inflammatory syndrome in children. This is an inflammation of virtually every other organ in the child's body. And also, the vaccine prevents long COVID. At least 1 in 10 develops the chronic disease. And it also protects against the spread of variants of concern. So, to all parents of adolescents, be reassured that 90% of about 300 Malaysian pediatricians surveyed were in favor of the COVID shots. So if you still have any doubts or concern, please check out with your peds or family physician. Yes, Xiaoning.
So, Doc, thanks for that. I think benefits far outweigh the risk. So, in your view, right, how should the program to get teenagers vaccinated get rolled out then?
Excellent question. We have a very good school health services. The children get their diphtheria and tetanus shots, and their BCG or TB scar is checked at 12 years old. The 13-year-old girls get their cervical cancer vaccines. Thalassemia screening is done at 14 years old. So we can easily fit in the COVID shots into the school health program. I personally have never been a fan of mega PPVs, Pusat Pemberian Vaccine, which are, by the way, potential epicenters of COVID outbreaks and a waste of taxpayers' money. Imagine I was on my mobile PPV last Sunday. My stroke patient in Kapar Klang was bedridden and was slotted for his shots in KLCC. Just imagine if the 8,000 GPs or the thousands of health centers were distributed with 100 vaccines, should easily get 800,000 doses daily. And these guys, the GPs and the PKDs, are distributed in every nook and corner of the country. By the way, hesitancy is less of an issue with childhood immunization. The uptake of our school vaccines are in excess of 90%. Yes, Philip?
Yeah, but I'm curious, Doc, you know, you mentioned hesitancy, and I'm sure there are going to be some parents who are, you know, concerned. How do we overcome their fears?
Well, to start with, right, let's make sure that all teachers and the school staff are fully immunized. And then we should follow this with the vaccination of our 12 to 17-year-olds. And the adverse effects, yeah, are minimal, usually within the first 24 to 48 hours. And these are minor adverse effects. Pain, tenderness, redness, 80% do get fever, but they resolve with paracetamol within the first 24 to 48 hours. The other adverse effects, which are especially so in the adults, are headaches, muscle aches, giddiness, right? Fever, right? Which eventually resolves by 48 hours. So, in my opinion, parents need to be reassured that the adverse effects are actually the cytokines kicking in to produce the protective antibodies to protect your child when faced with the coronavirus.
So, school reopening possible if all adolescents and teachers are vaccinated? And if yes, is October really doable?
Yes, it is the only sure way of preventing school clusters from happening. You just mentioned that 29% of the total COVID cases in the first 12 days in Sarawak were kids below 18 years old. Now, school clusters have been the driver of COVID waves in Germany, Austria, Belgium, Canada, UK, Israel. In England alone, the teenagers are the most frequently infected age group. It increased 50-fold after the schools reopened. In the United States, the first week of August, the cases increased by 400% from the previous 3 weeks. Why? Due to the Delta variant. So we must remember that kids, like adults, are equally susceptible to infection and they transmit COVID at a similar rate. The only reason is that they are less detected or diagnosed because they are mostly asymptomatic. And also, we test them less often than adults. And also, this is the good thing. Children fight off the virus much, much better. So there is less viral load before you get false negative results in children. So if community transmission is high, as it is now in Malaysia, you'd see the spillover into the schools and outbreaks become common. And vice versa, the school clusters may contribute to community transmission. So the Malaysian Pediatric Association, our friends, the engineers and architects in East Malaya, the Parent Action Group for Education page, and also Dr. Mazli, the former education minister, we've crafted a safe at school policy statement which addressed six major issues: healthy school policy, healthy school buildings, healthy classrooms, healthy school schedules, healthy school activities, and healthy vaccine for school children. Yes, Philip.
In the meantime, Doc, what about younger children below the age of 12? What does the data and science tell us about the effects of vaccines on this age group?
Okay, very quickly, we first need to understand the burden of COVID in these children. Up until the 1st of June this year, there were 82,000 COVID cases in children under 18. That's 14%. 15 died. And the majority of them had comorbidities. Now, what was the case fatality rate in the kids? 0.02%. In adults, it's 0.5%, which means that COVID in adults is 29 times more deadly. So within the context of a restricted vaccine supply chain, which we, all of my colleagues, pediatricians, are convinced that there is no compelling case for vaccination of healthy children less than 12 years of age. Yes, Xiaoning?
So then in view of that statistic, you know, overnight there has been some ruling about relaxation in dining. What's your view about unvaccinated children then being allowed to dine in with their fully vaccinated family members? Do you have any concerns on that?
This is what I describe as the national paradox. The NRP allows unvaccinated children to dine in. The Director General tweeted that they are opening, I quote him, they are opening because of economy and not because it is safe. The left hand in government does not know what the right hand is doing. Apart from being a paradox, it is what I describe as pandemic mayhem. Of course, it is no for kids to dine in. It is certainly not safe for unvaccinated kids to be engaged in indoor activities. By the way, they are more fun and safer activities for kids to do than dine in. Open all the parks, the theme parks, the zoos, the animal farms, all outdoor recreation areas. discipline our children with the pandemic trinity of non-pharmaceutical interventions, i.e. masking, which prevents 60% of transmission, even better with double mask and N95 mask. Physical distancing prevents 90% of spread, and thirdly, hygiene. The risk of outdoor transmission of COVID is 18 times less than indoor activities. The fresh air ensures a good flow of ventilation. We are blessed in our country to have loads of sunlight, which makes the virus less viable. So in my opinion, outdoor activities should be open to both immunized and the non-immunized. And this is especially important for our physical and psychological health. And finally, in my opinion, only fully immunized persons should be allowed to dine in, preferably dine outdoors, to shop in malls, supermarkets, enjoy indoor non-contact sports and other recreation. These indoor business outlets can only be open if their staff are fully immunized. And finally, the hashtag should be not stay safe, but should not be stay home. The paradigm shift, the mindset should be stay safe. Hashtag stay safe. Yes, Xiaoning and Philip.
Thank you so much for your time today. That was consultant pediatrician Datuk Dr. Musa Muhammad Nordin reminding us, if we want to go out, make sure it's well ventilated, and you know, we enjoy good weather, so why not? You know? So yeah. Stay safe. That's the key message, right? I think that's very important. But we're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin, and after that, we have the breakfast grill where Philip will talk about the state and future of private healthcare despite COVID-19 or in spite of COVID-19. So stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.